Hello and welcome to DNF One with myself, Glyn Martin, and today we're with Gareth Martin. Hello.
Hello.
So I spoke to Derek yesterday. Your first impressions of this track, Gareth?
Bonkers.
It certainly is. We've spoke about it being maybe Suzuka with barriers, but I think it's the most extreme track we've actually got in the calendar. It's the second longest, and it's also the second fastest, only next to Monza, and its average speed. But I think the thing that really makes this track stand out is the fact that so many of the bends are blind. It's such high speed. You're watching it, and you're like, holy crap. They're going to go around this bend and just find a car parked. And talking of which, when we were going through FP3, there'd been a few incidents. Hamilton had been away to the stewards for holding up Mazepin, of all people, as well as apparently going through double wave jellos. They've looked at it, and Sky tried to find footage and other rest of it. And to be honest, I think it's impossible to turn around and say that was the incident or that was where it happened. Yeah. You're coming around a blind bend, the light box is off to the left. It maybe flashed once as you're coming through at nearly 200 miles an hour.
I think they had a look at it on their Sky pad, and I think there was one where it was one second that they seen it. And I think come the race, if there's any issues on track, which I think there's a fairly there's high I'm chance sure. of, it's going to be difficult because these guys are essentially, as you say, they're flying around a blind bend.
Yeah.
They're only looking for I think it's going to be a difficult one to police.
The thing is, if you're coming around a bend doing 200 miles an hour and the car that's 1 second in front of you has had an instant into the wall, there's not enough time for you as the driver coming behind to react. There's not enough time for the marshals to react. Nothing. I mean, we've seen the incident at Spa, obviously, a few years ago, and that's a wide open track. You're coming over a blind summit, and that was the problem with that. That's what caused the fatality. This type of track, it's blind, but in a different way. It's not a blind summit. It's just a blind bend you're coming through. And
followed by another blind bend.
Yeah. It's just mental. Whoever designed this track, kudos to making something spectacular, but the safety question, which has been raised the whole weekend, is still at the forefront of everybody's minds.
I think it's the whole point about how it's going to be when you've got 20 cars all running in race trim.
Yeah.
Versus, we've seen free practice, we've seen quali, which has went reasonably well.
Yeah.
There's not been a great deal of issues that have come up. But I think when you've got 20 cars all running, as you say, at the point of actually racing, I think it's going to be completely different. It's great to watch. You're watching these cars and they're taking bends. Yeah, you know, they're going through that speed trap down 202 miles an hour. The guys are absolutely flown it through that track and it looks fantastic. But I think there has to be a bit of a concern somewhere around about actually if something does happen. You just hope that nothing does happen.
Yes. Fingers crossed we get through it safe tomorrow. We'll wait and see. But if we're coming back here for 10 years, I don't think in the 10-year history of this track, looking forwards, we're going to get away with it every single year. I can't see it. Anyway, let's hope. Fingers crossed. Let's move on to qualifying. At Q1, we've got Mick and Maz right at the back, Mazepin, Mick Schumacher. And then we come to the Stroll and Vettel, which it's kind of a weird one because they seem to be on the pace most of the weekend. We're getting to qualifying, and even when they say to Vettel, Vettel's like, what? There was some track evolution, I get that. Maybe traffic, but both of them in the same sort of out 16th, 17th and 18th is... It's an underdeveloped car for the season. I think that's really what it's come down to, and it's shown it here.
I think they've maybe just kind of given up completely now.
Yeah. When Latifi's out-qualifying you, both Williams have out-qualified them, there's got to be questions they need to ask, but Latifi in 16th in front of them. Nothing overly surprising. The Aston Martins have kind of been in those areas. It's a bit of a shock that they're there, but... going by ongoing performance, I'm not surprised by it. It's just where they are. Yeah. That being said, for those positions in the race, if there's incidents ahead, I think the potential's there. I think in the longer runs, the car will probably do better. And Vettel's got a a calm head in the cockpit, and Stroll hopefully can just follow him through. I think they'll be okay once we get to the race, because there's bound to be incidents, bumps, and wheels into barriers. Moving into Q2, Sainz, I think Sainz actually crapped himself 3 times.
Several times.
Yeah. And once he did it the third time, I messaged in the group chat and I says, look, Sainz, just park it, because clearly by then your heart's no in it. He'd dinged the back wings, there was maybe aero issues on it. It was a small dinghy, but on a track like this, you want all your aero surfaces to be working fully.
You want everything pointing in the right direction. I did like his oof, saved it. Yeah, aye.
Shat myself at the same time, but saved the car. Well, I guess after Leclerc demolishing the car, I think it was one wheel left in his wagon yesterday, Sainz to come out of that session just saying, well, I just bent to the one of the rear end plates. It's fine. You guys don't have to rebuild the entire car. But he is done in 15th. He just couldn't get the confidence back in the car after those incidents. No wonder. His confidence was completely gone.
I think given most of the time when you're ploughing into a corner here, what's right in front of you is just a wall. It must make you think twice. Mind you, I haven't said that. It was yesterday that it was one of the Williams, George Russell. He hit the brakes, his pedal went long, and he reports back that he's got a brake-by-wire issue. I've no brakes. They went, oh, no, it's come back, it's fine. And then he charges the next corner at full pelt. You're like, kudos.
Yeah, well... That's what they get paid. I would say the big bucks, but some of these guys at the bottom end of the field, aren't they on the biggest wages? It's under £500,000. No. Pounds. It's actually under £400,000. I think actually Russell's on £362,000 for the year, which is, I mean...
I'm sure most guys would do it for free.
Well, true. True. Probably know very well, but considering some of the watches these guys actually wear, Norris's watch is about £125,000. So considering that's what Russell gets paid for the season, you know, it's one of those things where it's a case of I'm doing it because of the experience. You know, it's like a YTS. Mind when you used to get paid £37 a week?
27
pound a week for a full-time job, and they went, it's for the experience, it's no child right. Slave labour. You were 18, but yeah. So yeah, Sainz probably was best just to give up. 15th there again, can probably go forward, maybe if he's getting the confidence in the car and incidents happen in front of him, I think he'll be fine. Russell, Mr. Saturday, in 14th. Alonso in 13th. I think he'll be disappointed after the good finish in Qatar for that.
Yeah.
But again, it seems to be that the Alpine suits certain tracks, and other tracks it's just not happy. And this is one of the tracks it's just not happy. Because he's got Kimi Räikkönen in front of him, and then we come to Danny Rick. Danny's got to take the highlight of the season, obviously, winning in Monza. But this latter half of the season, I think he's just wanting to just get it finished.
Yes,
we'll just get the end of the season. Yeah. Let's get a new car, and hopefully that'll fix all of Danny's problems. We can only
hopefully it'll fix all of the sports problems, or the majority of them.
Yeah, well, as we're getting closer to Christmas, we're going to have obviously a season preview for next year mixed with a season review this year, and we'll be talking about that as well. As we move into the top 10, Giovinazzi, who's not got to drive in Formula 1 next year, he's probably got to drive somebody else's, as Derek has said, but again, managed to get into the top 10. He's got skill, but he's had 3 years to actually show this, and it's only been the past 6 months that we've really seen it, so it's a case of he's had to hurry up. But the team have been looking elsewhere. I think some of it is to do with sponsorship from the new driver coming in and out with.
There's no point in hiding it under a bushel until you really need to pull it out.
Yeah.
The skill he's got there, that should have been on display for get-go.
Yeah.
You know, even if this season was the one that you had to do it, he should have been doing that for race one. He's pissed about the back of the pack for the best part of the year.
Yeah.
He's just not showing what he's got. No. And I think the fact that he's been dropped is of his own making.
Yes, I would say so. I think part of the other thing is that although he's a Ferrari driver, now Alfa Romeo have kind of not so much cut their ties with Ferrari, but they're moving in a different direction. There was the possible purchase of the team by Andretti, but that kind of fell through. So we'll wait and see. It's not off the cards. I think they were just asking too much money. The guy that actually owns Sauber, which is branded as Alfa Romeo, is a billionaire. So considering what the cost cap on these cars for the season's £125 million, to a billionaire, it's kind of chump change to actually run the team. So it didn't need to sell it, doesn't have to sell it. And let's be honest, you got that kind of money, $135 million, and you get the paddock pass and prime access to a team in the Formula One. It's maybe for him, it's just like going to the football every weekend.
Just nice.
Yeah.
Just season ticket.
Exactly. That's $135 million. I make that an interest in a week, you know. Ocon in ninth, a good result for him, at least inside the top 10. I don't feel they can really go somewhere from there. Maybe up a couple of places, down a couple of places. It's that's a great area where they're not going to get into the top six, but running's running. If they're in there, at least maybe some points. Maybe, you never know. I mean, I could have said the exact same thing about Hungary, but that was a bit out of the ordinary. But we never know. Tomorrow, who knows, Gasly might wing it in there like a bowling ball as well.
But we've seen it before. It's going to be an odd one to watch, because watching quali and free practice, you could never really tell where passing was going to be possible, or if indeed it's going to be possible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tight track at the best of times, so it may well take, you know, somebody making a banzai move for 10th, taking out the top 10, and then letting the back of the pack just fight it out. So yeah, after Mazepin. And, you know, he spent most of the season off the track. And it's that skill up to this point probably actually saved him for going into the wall. Yeah. That going off the track has actually helped him. So I think it's going to be absolutely bonkers, or it's going to be a procession.
The thing is, this close to the end of the season, we've watched plenty of races this season that I'd have rather been out gardening or scratching my backside than actually watching. Being this sharp end of the season for the championship, the front two, because the cameras in the race, unless there's an incident elsewhere, the cameras are going to be stuck on Max, Lewis, maybe Bottas if he's in the mix. But overall, that's where we're going to be focused. But you're right, stuff that's happening down further down the field is maybe going to affect the race. We could have safety cars, red flags, and that will feed into the strategy of the teams. And I think you're right, Gareth, it doesn't look like there's huge numbers of places to overtake, but on such a fast track, they thought, how many DRS zones will we have? Screw it, let's have three of them. You know, I mean, the thing is, next year's cars with three DRS zones, you can maybe get close on the first one, close on the second, and get the overtake done the third. On this one here, because they get into that dirty air, it's probably more dangerous being in the DRS at such high speeds, and you maybe got to break yourself. We might have the best race possible tomorrow. We're maybe just knocking it at the moment, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think it's that thing that
they're mentioning, the fact that tyres are going cold on the straights because they're going so fast for so long that by the time they get to the corner, the tyres have cooled down, they're hitting the brakes, and that's when you're getting lockups. You're getting, you know, front and back.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about Hamilton's lap, but there was quite a bit of understeer. It was quite a twitchy lap, considering it made it on pole, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. Next person, we've got Tony Sunda. I have to say, Tony's been a bit up and down. It is his first season in Formula One, but eighth? I mean, considering, again, the track, and everybody's new to this track, is that, could we turn around and say eighth is, I get some, it's maybe the car, it's a good car. Especially for qualifying, race pace, it seems to drop off a bit. But Tony getting that in at eighth, considering who's behind him, but on a level playing field, we've got to say that that's... I mean, he was surprised...
It's a good performance.
He was surprised he got re-signed for next season, but performances like this maybe actually go to show that he has actually got something.
They were saying about the fact that he's caused four red flags in a season, you know, so far this season. And you think, it's a lot. But he's pushing. He tries. He's getting. His qualifying results are pretty good.
Yeah.
Race results maybe aren't quite as impressive. But having said that, you know, the points that he's got on the board for a rookie year,
definitely,
that's not bad.
Yeah.
When you take into account, you know, I don't know, look at George Russell or, you know, these guys. It took George so long to score a point.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Yuki's coming in and he's actually delivering. He's doing well for the team. I'm glad they've re-signed him.
Yeah, I think next season, with everybody having a new car, the skill of these drivers is going to start shining through, especially the guys, because, unless you've watched them in lower categories and stuff, you can't turn around and say, oh, he's a great racer and stuff, because until he signed, I was like, who? I didn't watch the lower categories. I didn't have the time to watch the lower categories. But he's came in, he has performed well with the season, but I think next season, it's if anything, it's in favour of these guys, the Tony Saunders and maybe even, even the Haas team. That nothing can turn around and make their season any worse if they come in next season. I'll hold my breath on that one, actually. You never know. But if they're 20th and 19th and out, they can't go backwards unless another team comes in. Moving on, we've got Norris. The McLaren-Ferrari battle, I feel it's over. 31 points of a difference. Where these guys are scoring, we spoke about it on Friday, but it's a done deal. All Ferrari really has to do is keep their powder dry and look after their two cars. I get that Sainz is out of position, but so is Danny. Norris needs to have a good result. Leclerc's up there in fourth. Maybe he can hold position. Maybe, Derek says, both the Ferraris could bin it. It's not impossible. But if we look at the four drivers that are in there, maybe one bins it for each of the teams, and you're still then only getting a difference of maybe 6 points. 8 points is a good result for them, unless both the Ferraris bin it, but maybe one, but I doubt two, or they take each other out. Who knows? But
mathematically, it can be done, but
yeah,
I think when you look at it realistically and the performances that we see, and we mentioned it before about the fact that both the Ferraris have been a lot more consistent.
Yeah.
So they're maybe not. They're not always beating the McLaren, but they have been consistently coming in pretty much together.
Yeah.
So they've always been within a place or two of each other. And I think over the season, that's actually proven to be to their benefit. So the minute that McLaren started slipping a little bit, Ferrari had the high ground.
Yeah.
And as you say, unless something incredibly strange happens this weekend, that both Ferraris fail to finish, and Danny gets on top of that car and actually scores some good points.
Yeah.
I think you can safely say that McLaren are going to come in what, fourth.
Yeah, 12 million.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 12 million between third and fourth. Possibly as well, Gareth, they might have just... both teams have probably stopped developing the car and they're just kind of stuck with what they've got now.
Yeah.
In front of Norris, we've got Gasly. That's his 16th. We've spoken about Gasly's qualifying is fantastic. That's his 16th top six qualification out of the season so far. Considering that the points he's got, the conversion rate's really no very good.
And
that maybe goes down to some bad luck in the races, but it's maybe something he just needs to address in the race. He's had some better finishes towards the end of the season so far, but
the first
10, 12 races, great qualifying, backwards, incident, backwards, incident. So again...
A big element of bad luck in amongst it as well, but his overall performance just didn't quite live up to quali. It's a weird one, but
again, maybe something to do with the car, because both him and Tony have went backwards slightly in some of the races that they have. The thing is, it's like the Alpines and the Ferraris and even the Aston Martins were obviously getting ahead of them in some of the race paces. But overall, they've been a solid midfield runner. I get that, but I think the cars had so much more potential from the starting positions. And it just doesn't, over the space of a race, it just doesn't seem to work out for them more often than not. Yeah.
You wonder if there's a combination of car and driver in there that's letting it roll back.
Again, some of it might even just be investment. I mean, AlphaTauri, I don't know what their if they're working to the budget cap versus your Red Bull, the sister team. I mean, they're not even in the same country. How much of the car is the same? How much? I don't want to go back and rehash the point of the tracing points for the previous season, but surely you would think that they can develop things similar to each other, and there's maybe talk between them. I'm not sure where or what lines it would cross. and how much of the cars are actually identical to each other if they're buying components off the shelf from either each other, as some of the teams are for Ferrari and suspension and stuff. But you would think in race pace the cars would maybe be a bit better, but it is what it is. Next season, again, the opportunity is going to be there for Gasly to show us what he's got, you know?
What he's got.
Now, as we come into the top five, let me just say Leclerc's in fourth there. A really good performance. I mean, considering his car was basically in bits yesterday, they managed to get it back together. He got his head together, his confidence, and fourth for... I mean, fourth for the Ferrari. We have seen him a bit there in qualifying the past few times, but it's a real... And again, as we spoke about against the McLaren battle, another really good result for the Ferrari. Mm-hmm. Can he keep it in there? I think he probably could. He's got a Red Bull about him. I definitely think Gasly's going to trouble him. Norris maybe could get close, but I think he's on for a top six finish tomorrow anyway, unless he puts it in the wall or some crazy happens.
I think that's what you found with some of the Ferrari performance, though, is that they've kind of landed up in a no man's land.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've seen them in races where they are literally just racing themselves. There's no one on about them. There's no one coming up behind them. They're not gaining on the car in front. And you just kind of wonder if that's what's going to happen here, because that top speed is obviously where they stand to gain. And you don't know if they're just going to have a day out. Because there has been a few races where you've never seen them because they're on their own.
Yeah.
And
Leclerc's performance this season versus Sainz. I mean, I feel I've seen more Sainz, I've seen more action for Sainz, and I've seen less incidents from Sainz. Leclerc's the golden boy at Ferrari, and he's the future of the team, big long contract. But this season, hasn't he felt like that? It feels like Sainz is the guy that's doing stuff for the team.
Yeah.
But likewise, it could be that he's just in no man's land when we're watching races. Do you see the dynamic of the team between Sainz and Leclerc staying like this, an even keel between the two of them? Or do you think maybe next season Sainz might be able to get the better of Leclerc, vice versa? What do you think?
I think looking at Sainz, where he's been so far, he's definitely, again, had the upper hand between the two of them.
Yeah.
You would like to think going forward that Leclerc is going to shine a little bit more, because the guy's got skills, and we've seen that in some of the racing, especially when he was up against, it's odd because when he was up against Vettel, he was showing a clean set of heels week in and week out. Sainz has come along, and I mean, again, there's no doubt, and Sainz has got good driving skills, and I don't know what's just unbalanced him a little bit. See, he's gone through the season and just not really shone as well as he had before.
Yeah. See, when we talk about like the new drivers, the drivers that are coming through that will replace the Lewis Hamiltons and the Bottases, Alonso, Max and stuff. In my head, I'm thinking Sainz, Russell, Norris and Max. And Leclerc has went for being part of that group. And I don't know whether it's his driving or whether it's the Ferrari's let him down, but I still see Sainz as actually the more exciting driver. And we see him getting interviewed over the weekends and stuff, but I'm never in the race going, oh, where's Leclerc? How's he doing? But I'll do the same for Sainz. But it just seems to, it's just a known season. Maybe new cars, it might come alive and get back as part of that group, because he needs to. If Leclerc season doesn't turn up the next 10 world championships that are going to go to these up and coming drivers, Leclerc is going to be struggling, you know, and Ferrari put a lot of faith in him.
This is where it's going to get interesting, though. So, you know, as these older drivers start dropping out and your previous world champions start dropping away, you're bringing in a whole sort of field of people that everybody has sort of looked at as they've come along and went, you know, there's potential. So Max has really kind of stepped it up, and he has shown that potential.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next, as you know, 3, 4, 5 years, where that does happen. And a lot of these, it sounds terrible. Yeah, they're like 32, and you're going, oh, you're an old guy. But you're old for the, you know, because you've got 20-year-old kids coming into these cars and can drive them like it's going to affect. So, I think going forward, if these cars deliver for next year, then F1 is kind of putting itself back to where it should be.
Yeah.
With these you know, new drivers coming in and nice new shiny cars that can follow each other and can pass each other and don't get all skittish and wreck their tyres when they're within 10 minutes of the car in front.
We will see who shines next season, which I'm probably forward more to than even the end of this season. I can't wait. So we skip Perez here, but Perez in fifth, he'd been having a slow build-up this weekend. We knew it had to be close, but in the FP sessions, he was struggling at the back. But his type of weekend and how he builds up, especially on a track like this, it seems to be a bit slower, a bit more, not so much methodical, but that's maybe he's delving into the data a bit more than what Max is. Max, I think it just goes to show Max has got the raw talent. Max can go, right, I've done the sim work, I've prepped for this, I know where the bends are, just let me get in the car and drive. And Perez is like looking at the pages, let's do a debrief, yeah, let me get into that a bit more. But he's gone up into fifth. It's not a bad position, but if you get stuck behind Leclerc and like we've spoke about not being able to overtake
and that rest.
And the three at the front bugger off into the distance, he's not gonna be helping anyone. You know,
yeah.
So it's disappointing to see him in fifth, but likewise, if you're a Hamilton Merck fan, it's probably the sort of good news you can really take away from this, over and above obviously the pole positions. But we'll speak about that because it wasn't a done deal necessarily as a pole position. But Perez in fifth, Leclerc in fourth, and then we come to the top three. We've got Max in third, Bottas in second, Hamilton first. Let's work backwards for here. Let's talk about Hamilton first. Hamilton got pole position. The onboard of that lap, it didn't look like the car was handling brilliantly, but he still got a pole position out of it. And we'll speak about what happened with Max and why Hamilton's on pole and not Max. But they did fuel the car fully for the entire session. So when Lewis came out, he was on a heavier car, and maybe it was a bit of a hiding the true performance of the car for Red Bull, maybe to get Red Bull to commit a bit more. They're like, all right, Lewis is a quarter of a second off the pace here. Part of me wants to say it worked, but in actual fact, it was maybe just easier. They fully fueled him for the session and the laps, and his lap wasn't great, but it did the job. It was a bit twitchy. He was close to the barrier in places, and it wasn't a bad lap in any way she performed, but there was a better lap in there. But this is the thing, the Mercs on the soft seem to be pretty skittish in Q2 and Q1. They weren't happy on it at all. The Red Bulls can fire the tyres up that bit better than the Mercs can. So I think some of it is that. And even Hamilton, when he was coming a bit to do his final run, he was getting understeer at the front, so they asked for a whole turn, the extra front wing, and it helped get him round the lap. But then Bottas, we didn't hear as much chatter for Bottas. Maybe it was lost within the drama of Max and Lewis. I mean, Bottas got a new power unit put into this. At the end of Q2, it stopped at the end of the pit lane. They managed to roll it back to the pits, tighten up whatever it was, put some fuel in, off he went. And Bottas were a pretty solid second.
Yeah.
The best Merck could have expected this weekend is that Hamilton and Bottas.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Hamilton's performance, would you say it was measured? The car was twitchy, but do you think it was a measured performance around this track that could bite? I mean, Hamilton did have a spin earlier in qualifying. Maybe that's his mind. I don't know. But what was your take on Hamilton's overall performance, especially in Q3?
See, even taking free practice and qualifying, Hamilton's talking a good talk. So, do you know, when anytime he's interviewed, he's always very confident and very measured in what he says.
Yeah.
When you see Hamilton getting interviewed, it never really feels like you're getting the true kind of feeling for him. It's almost practiced. But when you were watching him on the track, I don't know if there was something going on in his head or what, because free practice and stuff, as you say, that he was in front of people, he was off the track.
Yeah,
we all were at different points, but he just didn't seem to be as on it as we've seen in previous years, races.
Do you think that's pressure, or do you just think that's him trying to dial in the car and maybe the tyres?
It can be pressure because, I mean, he's won it seven times.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like
But having said that, this is the first year that he's had somebody nipping at his. In fact, he's nipping at the heels of the leader of the championship at the moment. So I don't know if there might be something psychological. They keep talking about this when they're interviewing the two of them. You know, they're very calm and they're very considered in their talk. And you know, it, Max is saying if it doesn't happen this year, it'll happen another year.
Yeah,
but yeah, they've all kind of mentioned that, you know, they're like a swan, so on top there, they're just kind of gliding along, but underneath they're paddling like the devil. And I think that there's probably an element that comes into their minds when they're in the car. It has to be a consideration. And I think maybe it is having an effect on Hamilton in so much as he knows that this is, you know, if he wins this one,
yeah,
they go to the next race pretty much even Steven. Yeah. You know, there's nothing in it. And it all comes down to that last race. So could be in his head.
The thing is, obviously, if the Merck's not firing up the tyres, I do feel that some of it is partly the car. But in turn, I think Lewis was up at the steward's office and he was having to deal with, obviously, getting asked questions and stuff instead of being down in the garage. So his preparation for qualifying wasn't maybe what it usually is. And with these drivers, you know, these drivers all have their habits. And if someone throws that off, I mean, if they get into the car on a specific site, how they put on their gloves, all these types of things all play into it. And maybe the trip to the stewards didn't help him prep for it. But I certainly think that the Merck has maybe in race trim with the fuel on board, it's going to be that bit better for them. And if they are going with the mediums and hards instead of having to squirrel about in these softs, I think maybe the Merck will be a better race car than it has been qualifying. But then again, at the end of the day, we've got to turn and see, even under the pressure he's been under with Max breathing down his neck and what looks like a better car, maybe we firing up the tyres better. Hamilton's managed to pull it out of the bag, rightly or wrongly. Yeah. But let's talk about then Max's approach. Max, from the since FP1, Max has looked on fire around this track. Some of that, I think, is the car and the performance of the car that is really working for this particular track. And even although we've spoken about Mercedes having the power and the performance in these engines, this track clearly is no longer just about the power of the track. You've got to get around some of these bends. The downforce in the aero has clearly having an effect on it, which in the run into it, we didn't really know. And the engineer said, no, straight line speed is probably king here. It's turned out it's not the case, getting the tyres fired up. And as you say, these long straights, the tyres cooling down. So I don't think Merck's in for an easy run tomorrow, but Max this weekend, honestly, looked like he was operating on a different level, even against Hamilton.
Yes.
The confidence, the way he was talking to the media and stuff, it's a different Max that we've seen in any previous season. But then we get into qualifying, and it was his last run. Honestly, it was going to be the best lap of the season, if not the past couple of seasons. This is going back to Singapore and thinking 2018 when Hamilton managed to pull pole position there. It was that kind of lap. It was going to be one of the best. And we get to the very last bend. Max is up 0.40 a second on Hamilton's time. He's going to take pole position here. Going to turn 27. It's a banked bend. He locks up the front left. It's obviously a barrier on the outside as he's coming out. Frustrated, maybe just squeezes the power pedal too much and slaps the back end into the barrier.
Yeah.
Is that Max pushing too much, or is that it's just one of these things that's going to happen when you're performing at that level?
I think we spoke about this track and the possibility of, you know, people scraping their cars all the way down the barriers, and we've seen some examples of that. But I think when you watched Max driving that final lap there, he was absolutely on fire.
It was unbelievable.
And I think, it comes down to a simple lockup.
Yeah.
As you're taking coming into the pretty much the apex of that bend, it's locked up coming into it, and the car's run wide. And he's maybe just kind of hit the accelerator that little bit too hard at that point, and the back end has just fishtailed, smacked the wall, and it's game over. But it's that whole thing. These guys have got to try. And he was absolutely trying. And you have to, regardless of whether you're a Max fan or a Lewis fan, you have to take your hat off, because that lap was, as you say, he was last corner. He's balls it up. But had he done it, that would have been the lap of several seasons.
Yes, yeah, completely agree. The one possible issue he has is that the way it's obviously hit the barrier, it might have caused damage to the gearbox, the rear axle. Yeah. Some of the suspension looked like it had kind of pushed in towards maybe the gearbox. They're going to look at that. But the last thing we'd need would be a replacement gearbox and a gearbox drop. Because here, unlike other tracks where we've seen him in Qatar when he dropped down the five places because of the double yellow flags, getting from seventh to second here in a couple of laps, I don't think would be possible, especially if Bottas is up there. The track, the way it's set up, Bottas could maybe make the car, even if he just holds him up for a couple of laps, it'll be enough to give Hamilton enough space so we go into the last race all squaring points or give or take a fastest lap somewhere. But
you
certainly
don't want to decide on that sort of stuff.
No, given, well, that's it.
Where we are.
Yeah.
Because we've had a few races this year that have been disappointing in how the result has come out, you know, whether it was like Baku or Silverstone, you know, we've had all these issues. This is where you want them right behind each other, racing hard. And no doubt, you know, I would hate to get to this where it's decided on tactics.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that being said, tomorrow's race, strategies of the teams, safety cars, medium and hard tyres, it's an evening race. I don't know where it's going to go. Look, the thing is, even at this point, if this race was second on the calendar, we'd be like, wow, the track's fast, it's this, that. But then we get into the race, and if everything just held station, we'd come away going, well, what are we going back there for? But because it's at this end of the season and we're in a position where the tiniest mistake, a stuck wheel nut, a graze with the barrier, or just no pressing the brake hard enough, maybe Max, that any of these small things. Yeah. could that possibly, that one mistake there, Gareth, do you think that could be Max's championship? Up in the air, going, smoke? Or could we could look back to that point? No.
Yeah, I hope not. But do you know what? There's every chance it could be, and that's not to say that it's Red Bull's to throw away. An echo there for somewhere.
Anyway. I could be proud of you. That's my boy. Look, one thing I would say is Max keeps everything on the level and cool, calm and collected. Even Red Bull as a team, apart from Christian, who likes showing off for Netflix, as does Toto, it's not a one-sided thing. I would say when they got Max back to the paddock and they interviewed him for finishing in third, he looked white as a ghost. He looked ill. And I only say that because maybe there's a he knew what happened there and what he's lost or what he's potentially lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, it's been a long season, and I suppose to get to this point and to have that happen on the final bend, the final lap within quali is, it's a bit of a nut cruncher. Mm-hmm. But do you know what it is? It is what it is. Let's see. Yeah, there's no points for Saturday.
No, well, that's it.
Tomorrow.
I tell you, the one thing it does make it, because having seen the performance of the Red Bull through the race, I think if Red Bull were actually out in front, I don't think Merck would have been able to do anything strategy-wise for them. And I think actually it would have been a case of Max maybe would have actually taken the win on this, looking at the performance running up to qualifying. This gives us something else to actually look at, and it should make it more exciting. And plus, if this makes it go to the last race of the season, fantastic. The other thing that we're going to have problems with on this track is going to be bike markers. Now, this is the second longest track, so it's going to take a wee while until they actually start catching them. But Jesus wept. I mean, blue flags come around a bend. Somebody, the mind boggles at how this is going to play out tomorrow. It really does.
We've seen how difficult it is to see the double waved yellows. Blue flags, I think. Mind you, it does flash up in the dash, but I think it's going to be an interesting race tomorrow.
What I usually do when I'm doing 200 miles an hour in a sneaky trackers. Look at my dash.
Of course you do. I dropped my sweeties. Where did they go?
At 30 miles an hour, if I go try and change music, I wind up nearly off the road. So it's crazy. Luke, you can obviously join us after the race tomorrow for the podcast. The race itself is at 5:30 p.m. For some weird reason, I don't know why it's just not.
Yes, remember it's 5:30 p.m.
5:30 p.m. British summer times or British times. I've got into the habit of saying that it's snowing and I'm like, it's British summertime. It's how it'll play out tomorrow, we have no idea, but it's going to be worth watching. Join us after the race. Gareth, there's nothing else for me to say except it's goodbye for me.
And it's goodbye for me.
Take care, stay safe, and we'll speak to you tomorrow. This has been a Beautycat production for DNF1.